Roz and Mocha.
When we started this, Mocha and I knew very little about each other.
Two opposites.
My only focus was going to be to get on the radio.
Everything about having an audience terrified me.
We started from the bottom and built one of the biggest radio shows in the country. Now, in a six-part podcast docuseries, this is the story they've never told.
Roz and Mocha will celebrate 15 years on air together this August, originating from Toronto's KISS 92.5 and heard across Rogers Sports and Media's KISS Radio Network. We welcome the morning duo to Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast, to talk about the history of Roz and Mocha, a new audio docuseries exploring their origin story. Among other topics, we dive into their on-air relationship and staying power, and why as a network show, they're fighting the live and local philosophy.
Hey, this is Roz Weston, one half now, proudly, of the Roz and Mocha Show on KISS stations across the country in the Roz and Mocha Show podcast. My start was really, I never wanted to be on the air. When I was younger, I wanted to be a rock star. Like, that's just the way that it was when you grew up in a small town in the 80s. If you wanted any sort of fame or audience, you really didn't have choice between, you know, you were either going to learn how to play hockey or you were going to learn how to play guitar. And I wasn't that great at either of them. And then I had incredible stage fright. So I never played in any bands live before. And that sort of path took me to want to get into this business. But as a writer and a producer, I never wanted to host anything. It terrified me. And so I went to college, and my experience with college was not great. And it wasn't because of the course. It was just because I wasn't a fully formed adolescent at the point, and I had a lot of other stuff going on. And the sort of first big opportunity I had was after year one at Humber College. I moved to New York and started an internship on the Howard Stern Show. And I left there early and came back and sort of refocused my life. And the first radio job that I got was actually on CHFI back in the day, when CHFI had to, FM stations used to have to run talk shows at noon every day. And Paul Cook was, who's the main news anchor on 680 News right now, he was the executive producer of this news and public affairs show on CHFI. And I worked there for a long time. And then I left there and I went to television to write and produce for other shows on TV. And life just takes a turn on you at some point, and you got to sort of regroup and rebuild. And I had the opportunity to go and work for KISS 92.5 version one. So the country station turned to KISS, and I went and produced for Mad Dog and Billy, which was the morning show at the time, and did that. And it was really wonderful, because that's where I met Julie Adam, and she was incredible. And then that station flipped to Jack. And I left KISS and I went to work for, there was an upstart television station called Toronto One, and they were doing a late night show with multiple hosts. I interviewed for that company to be the executive producer of the late night show, and I didn't get the executive producing job. And then they had asked me if I wanted to come in and audition for it. And at that time, I had never done anything on air before, and I had nothing else going on, and I got confidence from where, I don't know. And I went in and auditioned for it, and I wound up getting the job. And that was my first on-air job. So I hadn't done anything on air really until I was, I think, 30 years old. I was 30, so I was kind of late to the game. And that led to ET Canada, which was when that launched on Global. I was the third person hired for that show. There was the executive producer, a senior producer, and then me. I was the first on-air talent hired for ET Canada. And I did that for, you know, 5 or 6 years. And then KISS came back. And when KISS came back, I reached out to Julie, because I knew they didn't have a show and it was a brand new station, and I knew they were going to be starting from the bottom. And I wrote her and I was just like, hey, listen, I want to do this show and I know we get along, and if it's no good, don't worry about it, because, you know, I already have a great full-time job. And then wound up sort of working, you know, building a show and met Mocha through, you know, Tate Mocha was already hired to do afternoons on Kiss, and then met Mocha, and we started sort of building this show. And at the beginning, there was just not a lot of rules. We sort of, you know, at the time, there was no social media. There was no anything else in 2009. Everything was just sort of starting. And we kind of built like this anti-radio show where we didn't really want to do anything with it. And as far as the staples go in a show, news, traffic, and weather and all of that stuff. We had incredible freedom at the time to sort of build this in the vision that we wanted to, because the expectations were incredibly low, and it worked. And, you know, we're now in August, it'll be 15 years that we've been doing this show, and we've built something really great, and we, you know, built it together, and we've worked for incredible people, and then spawned the podcast and spawned this podcast series, which is the sort of history of the show before the podcast, because hardcore fans always have a ton of questions about what were those early years like. And that's what we've jammed into this. And last year, a year and a half ago, I had released my book. It was a memoir. And fans loved it, but there wasn't a lot about the Roz and Mocha show in the book. I didn't tell a lot of that story. I told a couple of the early stories from when Mocha and I first got together, but I didn't tell a lot because I felt that that was a story better told between the two of us. And then we got together, you know, about a year ago and started putting this documentary together. And that's where we are now.
My name is Mocha, one half of the Roz and Mocha show on Kiss 92.5 in Toronto, but also Kiss radio stations across Canada. And of course, the Roz and Mocha show, the hugely popular Roz and Mocha show podcast. My radio journey started when I was legit like a kid, just nerding out, listening to radio growing up, and just fascinated with the amount of fun that the on-air announcers were having during any day part with the music that I enjoyed. It was a lot of top 40 stuff, a lot of urban stuff. And it was all the stuff that I was into. And I was also a DJ. I was interested in collecting vinyl and DJing parties and bought a set of turntables and a mixer and started collecting. And when I was 16, I knew that I wanted to be on the radio. That was my main goal in life at 16 years old, was to focus on somehow, some way, try to get on the radio. Not necessarily to be an on-air personality, but more in line with wanting to be a DJ that did like mix shows and nightclubs and stuff like that, because I just thought it was fun and that was kind of like my world at the time. But as I listened to more and more radio, just kind of heard how much fun the announcers were having talking to callers and like introducing records and just like how it sounded amazing hitting the post, and it just got me hyped. My focus, like I said, when I was 16, was to do that. And because of that, unfortunately, some of my grades in high school I kind of failed some classes and had to stick around a little longer, just because I was just so focused on radio and not really caring about classes like history or English or math, which I needed math and English definitely. And I applied for the radio television broadcasting program at Seneca College, and they made you take a test in order to get in to the program the following semester, because they only had a certain amount of students that they would let in. Took the test, failed horribly, told my dad I was going to take a year off. My very strict, highly educated accountant father would not take that for an answer and said, like, no, like you're going to school. You got to figure something out. So I took a year at Centennial College in Toronto and got my grades back up, retook the Seneca test the following year, got in ecstatic. And spent the next 2 years just kind of crafting my radio skill, I guess, and kind of falling in love with being an on-air personality and trying to perfect that. And then I graduated from Seneca in and around the time Kiss 92.5 switched in Toronto from a country station to a top 40 radio station. And that's when I met Julie Adam and pretty much harassed her for about 3 weeks to give me a job, call her once a week for 3 weeks. And then she eventually called me up and was like, hey, we're looking for board ops. Do you want to come in And I was like, absolutely, learn how to use the board, learn how to use the system, learn how to use their editing program. And I was there pretty much every single day, helping out the music department, trying to soak up as much knowledge as I could from different people who would stand to listen to me. Eventually, they were ready to launch a morning show. At the time, it was Mad Dog and Darren Jones. And they asked me if I would stick around one day because I was board hopping midnight to 5 a.m. Monday to Friday, but also doing like weekend club gigs, just board hopping that stuff from the clubs. And they said, hey, do you want to come in and show the guys how the system works? I was like, yeah, no problem. I thought it would be a temporary thing, like maybe 2 weeks they'd pick it up. But then they slowly started kind of using me on the radio as like a producer slash stunt guy slash, you know, guy on the street type of thing. And they had asked if I wanted to stick around. I didn't think it was going to last very much longer after that, but it turned into like, I think it was like 2 years maybe, or a year and a half that I became the producer. When Darren left, it was Mad Dog and Billy. So I continued to produce for that show, but Julie knew, I made it known to Julie that I wanted to be on the radio really, really bad. So she then quickly became like my coach and I would guess mentor after all this time as well. And she coached me along the way. And on top of being the producer for Mad Dog and Billy, Julie gave me weekend shifts. It started out as like overnight after the club night that I was working at. I would come into the radio station and do a shift from 2 to 4 a.m. And then eventually it became 2 to 6 a.m. And then eventually it became like noon to 6 p.m. or something like that. It was like a evening, but she allowed me to take up time on the air on the weekends to keep working on my skill. And then eventually I left the producer job for the morning show, and I was doing overnights on Kiss, midnight to 5 a.m. And then an opportunity in Calgary came up for one of our radio stations. They were turning Rock 97, I believe it was at the time, in Calgary, and they were switching it to a urban station, Kiss 969, and asked if I wanted to go out there. And I did middays because there's no room on the current Kiss Toronto lineup for me to kind of advance outside of just doing the overnight gig. So I went to Calgary, did the midday show for about 6 months. And then after that, I was asked if I wanted to join the morning show. And I did that for about 2 months. And then they decided to switch that radio station to Jack FM. And I called Julie and I was like, what do I do? I'm out here all by myself. I left like literally everybody I know in Toronto. I'm stuck. And Julie, being the nice person that she is and caring person that she is, created a position for me at Kiss in Toronto. They had never had a assistant music director, and she knew I really liked music and thought I would be good for that position. And they were able to justify bringing me back to Toronto, where I was assistant music director of Kiss. They had no on-air positions available, and she knew I really wanted to be on the air. And then an opportunity came up in Kitchener, Ontario, for a brand new radio station called The Beat, 91.5 The Beat. So it was a partnership between CanWest Global and Rogers. Rogers would sell a radio station. CanWest Global would own the radio station. I was then out from 2004 or 2003 to 2009 in Kitchener as their music director. And when I went out there, it was to do the evening show. And then I got bumped up to afternoons a few months later, and a couple of years later got bumped up to mornings. And then Kiss in Toronto switched from Jack FM to Top 40 Kiss. Julie called me up and said, hey, do you want to come back to Toronto? I said, yes. Without even talking about what the gig paid, anything like that. My goal was to always make it back to Toronto. I had always loved Kiss 92, Kiss 92.5. That format just like meant everything to me. It was where I started my career. It's where I knew I wanted to always work. And she hired me to do the afternoon show. And then eventually the story takes a turn. A couple of weeks later, I was asked to do the morning show. And that's how Roz and I kind of came together to do this show. And all the in-between, I guess, of what happened, how that transpired, is covered off in the history of Roz and Mocha.
Let's talk more about the history of Roz and Mocha. You already alluded to it, Roz, but How did the discussion around this project start in terms of deciding that you really needed to put the show's origin story out there?
One, it's incredible fan service. And when we started the podcast, Mocha and I actually fought to get the podcast. When we started the podcast, we weren't allowed to talk about the podcast on the radio because they didn't want people listening to the podcast and not listening to the radio show. And so the podcast was this thing that we just wanted to give to fans, a condensed version of the show. And it was another way for people to just consume, because the thing about radio, you know, other than best of shows on weekends like other shows would do, once you do it on air, it was largely just sort of gone. And we had always, from day one when Mocha and I started this show, we did what radio shows back then did not do, which was we kept everything. We have an incredible archive of everything we've done from the very first day we turned the microphones on. We have everything. And when we started the podcast, it was years after the show had started. When we got to the point of where the podcast started to take off and people in the company started to sort of notice, it was like, how do you build that out? And then all of a sudden, Mocha and I had all this pressure of like, well, you got to, you know, the ratings on the radio show matter, but now you have to like start getting all these new, you know, podcast subscribers. And, you know, it was sort of this monster we built that we then had to feed. And when the idea came up of doing a documentary, I don't think that the people who, you know, asked us if this type of thing would be possible realized the scope, because when they asked, it was over a year ago. And I think that they thought that we were going to throw something together within a couple of months. And I've worked on long form stuff before, and I know that this stuff takes a long time. And in order to do six episodes, it's taken over a year to do these six episodes. And then what it boiled down to was, you know, there was a lot of mandates and a lot of ideas, but it came down to the fans, which is that this is just, it's first and foremost fan service. And it's us answering a lot of questions that fans have had. And it's us telling a story together for the first time that we've never told like this before with everybody who is there.
Can you talk about some of those questions that you endeavor to answer? I imagine as the show's footprint has expanded across the KISS network, that the reach of that audience keeps growing.
I think one of the questions, or one of the things that the history of Roz and Mocha is going to answer is, so I was hired by Julie to do the afternoon show. And a couple of weeks later, Julie asked me if I would switch from afternoons to mornings, if I would do the morning show and be the co-host with Roz. And I said no. And I said no. She had asked me like three times if I was sure. And for about 2 weeks, I had said no, because the reasoning behind me saying no is because I was working mornings in Kitchener for a couple of years. And prior to that, I had done the morning shift as a producer. And I know what those hours are like. I know what those hours do to a person. And at the time, realistically, I was looking forward to sleeping in. I was looking forward to not waking up in the middle of the night. I was looking forward to having a quote unquote normal morning and finishing work at a decent time in the afternoon and being able to have the late afternoon entire evening where I could hang out with my friends or I could go out, because at that point in my life, I was a single guy. I had, you know, friends that just loved to hang out all the time. And that was kind of like the reason why I kept saying no, instead of looking at what the opportunity had presented and like the bigger scale, the grand scope of what doing a morning show in a city like Toronto really is. And I'm glad I came to my realization, and I'm happy that that Julie accepted my phone call. And when I told her that I was an idiot for saying no, and pretty much said, like, if Roz is still down, if you're still down, I'm like, let's make this happen type of thing.
Yeah, because I had never hosted a radio show before. And when I convinced Julie to hire me for this, there was like a moment of joy where, you know, you get the deal and you're like, I got it. And me and my now wife were, you know, really celebrating at the time. And then the reality hit where it was like, well, who am I going to do this show with? And Julie had sent me, once it came out that I was doing the show, the response from people for the call out who wanted to do the show with me was incredible. And there was a lot of tapes, and there was a lot of, back in the day, I guess, like CDs and links. And I would have failed with all of them. And Julie sent me Mocha's tape. He was already hired for the station. And when I heard Mocha, I was like, that's the guy. And when we asked Mocha, we both thought it was going to be the slam dunk that he was going to say yes immediately. And then he said no. And we were like, oh my God, well, what am I going to do now? And I got on the phone with Mocha and I tried to convince him, and he was still reluctant. And then we just gave him time. And then he kind of came around on his own. It was a partnership built on Julie's insights into Mocha and why he was so wonderful, because she wanted him to be a part of the station regardless. And it was my hearing Mocha and realizing that this was the only person, there was no plan B, that this was the only person that if I was going to have a shot at doing this, that it needed to be the two of us. And that's what it was.
Yeah. And the thing is with when it comes to Julie, like she has been, like I have so much love for Julie. Like she has been instrumental in like every kind of advancement in my career, because I, no matter where I was, I always called Julie or I always emailed Julie and was like, can you listen to this? Or can you give me your opinion on this? Like, what do I do here? She was like my person that I trusted more than anybody else. She always, always made time for me. And I knew when I was going to come back to Toronto, like I knew I could count on her, and I knew it was, you know, it was all a trust thing, right? And I knew that when, after saying no so many times, that Julie still gave me a chance and said, like, yes, like, you idiot for saying no, like, let's make this happen. I trusted Julie. I didn't know Roz, like, I knew of Roz. And when I was working at the station in Kitchener, what people may not know, and what you'll learn in the history of Roz and Mocha, is that our radio station in Kitchener was owned by the company that owned ET Canada. And when I was doing the afternoon show, there were a couple of times where I would do entertainment reports with Roz and talk about segments that were coming up on ET Canada. So we had that kind of connection, but just in on like a base level, I guess. Like, we weren't buddies, we weren't friends that were like contacting each other all the time. And to go back even further, when Roz was working for Mad Dog and Billy at KISS in Toronto, when I came back from Calgary, we were working at KISS at the exact same time. When Roz was leaving for the day, I was coming in for my gig as assistant music director, and we would legit pass each other in the hallway and was just like, hey, good morning, hey, see you later. And then that was it. Like, I have no memory of that.
I have absolutely no memory of any of that.
I have a picture that I show Roz every now and then of the two of us at a station concert at Rogers Center, where we're standing like two people apart from each other. We worked at the radio station at the exact same time, just different departments. Mm. But we like never hung out. We were never buddies. It just so happened that we were same place, same time, same era.
When Mocha and I met for the first time, I thought I was literally meeting him for the first time.
Thanks. The show. Clearly, I made an impression. But no, listen, at the end of the day, you know, like I said, I trusted Julie and I knew she would never let me down, and she would never ask me to do something that she didn't believe in. And she believed that, you know, we were two complete opposites. She knew our personalities and that we would try. That's all she wanted us to do, was try. And props to her, because she let us try, and we tried and we pushed the envelope, and she always had our back and always guided us and just let us go. Really?
Let's talk about what this docuseries encompasses. Interviews with everyone you've ever worked with, celebrity fans of the show, haters, your parents. You mentioned that this was a huge undertaking. Can you tell us more about, you know, bringing all of this material together?
Yeah, it was when you put something like this together, you sort of go digging through the archives of a show, but you're forced to go digging through the archives of your lives. And one of the things that I realized when we were putting this together was that this is not a story about a radio show. It's a story about two, literally we were, I know Mocha says that he has a picture of the two of us together, but for the most part, we were strangers. And before we started this show, we went for one drink and one drink only. And we only talked about the radio show for about five, you know, maybe realistically, like about a half an hour before we did the show a week and a half later. And that was all the prep that we had. And we went in that first day and just turned on the microphones. And we were like, well, let's just do this and see what happens. But what you hear during the show is that there's so much great dirt for fans. We talk about, you know, our contracts and negotiating and offers to leave, and like it's all in there for people. But at its core, this is a story of two people who decided to do a show in a way that very few people had ever built a morning show before, which is we removed all of the things at the very beginning that are show killers, which is, you know, jealousy and ego and envy. And Mocha and I have negotiated together as a team since day one. And so there's no secrets between the two of us. We don't meet with management individually. We really like only ever meet together. We have our certain things that we talk to bosses about that we need to alone. But when it comes to the show, the legacy of the show, the history of the show and our place in that world, we do everything together. And so we removed all of that from the very beginning, and it allowed us to be free of all of the show killers that have plagued so many people who have attempted to do what we do for as long as we've done it. And we did it from day one. When you get through the docuseries, it is an incredible story about friendship. And that is really it. It was described to me as a love story, which is really incredible to hear.
Who said that?
Yeah, when you get to the end of it, because what you find is that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do this without Mocha. And when you listen to everybody else in the world sort of go through and give their perspective on the show, it is the only way that this worked. It wasn't because of gimmicks or contests or, you know, the crazy stuff that we had done over the years. It was simply because I went in there with the mandate every single day that I was never going to let Mocha down. And Mocha went in with the same thing. And we decided very early on that this was going to be more than a show. And Mocha and I tied our lives and our families together. And we were just hell-bent on making sure that this was going to work.
What's going to surprise people? In the announcement, you teased one interview that's going to melt minds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we can't talk about that.
That's the finale. That's the final episode.
Yeah.
But for fans of the show, there are a lot of mysteries to what we've done over the years. One of the mysteries is, you know, Mocha has always seemed to be very private about his personal life, especially in the early days. And one of the things that we get very deep into, it's not the archives of Mocha being private, but it is why he was so private. Because when you start out in this business, every PD and consultant will tell you that you got to relate to your own life. In order to build that connection, that emotional connection with an audience, you got to sort of, you know, be relatable. You have to open up. And Mocha never did that. And he was determined to build that connection without giving up everything. And to his incredible credit, he did. But it's the why he was so reluctant is what we really get into in the docuseries.
This docuseries isn't the first time the show has expanded its presence online. The Roz and Mocha Retro Show, which is kind of a best of, debuted last year. Do you see yourselves now as content first, as opposed to radio first?
I think we've always been content first. It just so happens that we also do a radio show. it always comes back to that connection that we have, or sorry, that trust that we have in each other, that we know that when the microphone goes on, someone's going to say something, and it's the other person's job to listen and to ask questions. And also to invite our listeners to be a part of the show. I know, you know, it's cliche. People always say, oh, be a part of the conversation. But like, no, our listeners, we are constantly calling people that text in because we want to learn about them and we want to know why they sent the certain texts that they sent, or we answer every single phone call that comes in because we want the listeners to be a part of this thing, this community that we have all built together. It just so happens that we're doing it on the radio and it's the Roz and Mocha show. But again, going back to this history of Roz and Mocha, it's incredible fan service because, listen, the fans have been with us for almost 15 years now, right? You got a handful of fans that have been with us for almost 15 years. You have fans who have been with us for maybe 10 years. We just talked to one person earlier today, just started listening a year and a half ago. So there are a lot of people who have a lot of questions. There's a lot of history about our show that people want to know and that they're going to get from this docuseries.
I want to talk about networked programming for a second, because this is something that's still building in Canada, even though it's been pretty common in the US and the UK for a long time. The idea of a national morning show, do you have thoughts on doing it well? And as the Roz and Mocha footprint has expanded, does it make you think differently about how you approach what you do?
I am still very frustrated with networking a morning show. Mm-hmm. Very. The idea, because it has always been, you know, we don't live in Boston where you have New York, Philadelphia, all of the New Jersey, everything where everybody's on the same time zone. Everybody can get it. Everybody understands where a show is originating from. For some reason in this country, they have, and I don't mean the listeners, I mean programmers, still have this thing where you have to pretend you're local or do, you know, local content, which is fine, but you can't talk too much about being from Toronto. Like, they still have all this stuff. And I have always been under the philosophy of, like, a great show is just a great show, and it doesn't matter where it's from. People are going to figure it out. They can Google Mocha and I and know exactly where we live and what city we broadcast from. So the idea of hiding it is something that Mocha and I have just fought against and fought against and fought against. But I think that it can be done. Canada has a lot of time zones and very little radio stations, so it's not as easy as just putting the show on a bunch of stations. And I think that we've done a great job. I mean, I know that when I was working radio years ago, even in the early 2000s, there weren't a lot of morning, you know, fun radio shows. There was news and everything else, but that there wasn't a lot of shows like this that were morning shows in other market. That was very much an American thing. And when we started to do it, there weren't a lot of comparables. And I think that the frustration and the fights that Mocha and I are happening, hopefully years from now, you know, we fought those fights for a reason. And that, you know, we're still from the inside trying to change the model.
Mm-hmm. There's like a million podcasts and everyone's got their favorite podcast that they listen to. And a lot of those podcasts, the listener knows where they originate from because the host will say, you know, here in New York City or here in Chicago or here in Los Angeles, whatever. And guess what? If it's a good podcast, I don't care where it comes from. If I'm interested in listening to the content, what the people have to say, who the guests are, I don't care where it originates from. And I don't think that people, listeners in this country, care either. I don't think that they care if the Roz and Mocha show originates out of Toronto. As long as the content is there, the conversation is good, people know that they can be a part of the conversation and join in on the show anytime that they want. And, you know, that they have an outlet to voice their opinion. As Roz said, like, we fought long and hard about this live and local kind of philosophy, appreciative that the show is on all of these different radio stations across the country, but wish that the old school mentality of live and local wasn't such a big thing for programmers, because again, I think listeners care about the content and that's it. I don't think they care where it comes from.
As was mentioned off the top, the show is marking 15 years, which is a milestone a lot of morning shows don't get to these days. Do you have thoughts on staying power for other talent that might be listening?
Here's what I'll say. I never in a million years thought that I would be on a show that's going on 15 years. Like, coming into this, I never thought, like, I didn't have a number in mind. Like, it still blows my mind. Like, I remember a lot of things about the show, but it still like blows my mind that we've been doing this almost 15 years now. Appreciative. My God, appreciative. I think that from my perspective, what's helped the show is that, you know, Roz and I, we just trust each other. We have so much trust. We don't argue. Roz, you know, mentioned earlier, like a lot of our meetings, like they are with the two of us, contract negotiations, everything. It's the two of us. When it comes to this, like, we know what the end goal is for every single day. We know what we want out of the show. We know, you know, what we expect of other teammates on the show to do every single day. And it just comes down to trust. And I think part of that trust is what helped the two of us kind of sustain this life in radio going on 15 years now. It's been incredible. It's been enjoyable. It still blows my mind because we are now, at least in the city of Toronto, like, there's no other radio show that has had the exact same two hosts for as long as us right now, like in this current landscape. Like, everyone has changed at least one co-host or an entire team on stations. People have tried to build morning shows to fight against us. And, you know, if I can be cocky for a second, have friggin' failed because they have gone about it not in the way that we have, I think, at least. And I'm like, you know, I'm very, very proud of this show. This show means so much to me that I come in here every single day. And I know that I'm going to work my ass off and do what I can to make that show amazing and support Roz and let him know that he could trust me, that I'm never going to let him fall on the radio. And I know he's going to do the exact same for me. Like, this is incredible. And I'm, you know, very appreciative of the opportunity that we've been given. And I'm in it for as long as people want to listen.
I would say that it will never be a talent problem when it comes to radio. It's always going to be the sort of landscape of how companies treat morning radio. Mocha and I are now 15 years. And when you look around at the people that are still on the air that were there when we were there, Marilyn Dennis, and there's a few other people across the country, we're the last ones who are going to experience what Mocha and I experience, which is the freedom to do creative things, which are the contracts that we have, which are the stability that we have, which is the trust that we have. Once we're gone, the philosophy of radio, which I think anyway, has taken over radio, which is very different than when what we do and what we started to do. I think all that's going to change. And it's not a talent problem. It's always going to be a programming problem. And I think that what is lost is the building a connection. Mocha and I, when we started this show, we had a brand. And I hate to use the word brand because I never like when people think of themselves as a brand, but the brand of Roz and Mocha, through the show, the noise we made and the marketing we did, the brand was for years always worth more than what the show made. And I don't know if people are going to get the opportunity to fail and to not bring in incredible ratings the way for the years that we did. And because there was a lot of really, really lean years in there where the only reason why we were on the air is because people still believed in the show. And they would look at the research, and the research never matched the ratings. For a lot of years, we were number one in research, and we were number eight in ratings. And the hope was just hang tight, it'll all even out. And it eventually did, but it took a long time. And what I fear now is that people aren't going to get that runway, and it's a PPM game where you're going to be not forced, but you're going to be put in positions to have shows who are designed to maximize PPM gaming. And is that great for a station? Sure, of course it is. But does it make great radio where you build an incredible connection to people and have a show that has the connection that everybody wants to do when you are waking up at 2:30 in the morning every day? I don't think it will. And so for 15 years for us, it's been incredible. It's been really, really incredible. But I don't see how what Mocha and I do is the future of this business at all.
Is there a thought that either of you want to close on?
Yeah, I'll close on this, which is when we started this show, there was one thing that Mocha and I did not do that sort of blows everybody away. And when you listen to the docuseries, The History of Roz and Mocha, we give a little bit of clarity, not a lot of clarity, because there's really no solid answers to it, which is we've been doing this show now for 15 years in August. And Mocha and I think the big shocker for people is we don't hang out outside of the show. We barely talk outside of the show. And in the 15 years we've been doing this, we have, I think, seen each other socially three times, two of which were our wives' ideas. But we don't have that relationship. Like, Mocha and I don't do a lot of socializing outside of this show. Like, really, like, our relationship. And for fans of the show, when you hear us doing this show in the morning, these are the conversations, the only conversations that we have and what we've built this incredible relationship on. And for me, the gift of all of this is the incredible friendship that Mocha and I have. What I realized when putting this docuseries together is how many people have a permanent record in the archives on tape of every single conversation you've had with somebody that you became extremely close to. And we have that. And that's what this documentary is.
Like, we don't even go for coffee after the show.
No.
No, but you know what? I think because we get along so well, we don't need those outside of the show hangouts. And it just makes for better, greater storytelling, because it allows us each to ask a million questions about the other person, about what that person was doing when the other one wasn't around, right? Like, we don't get into, like, after the show, you know, get together and sit down and have breakfast and, like, talk about our weekend or talk about what we have coming up. Like, all those conversations that you would think would happen outside of the show, they just happen on the radio. And I think that we don't need, as much as I love Roz to the core, I love him so much, and you know, can't do this show, would not do this show without him. Like, I think that these are the conversations that help build that connection, not only with each other, but with our fans, with the listeners, new and old, because they are learning things about us still every single day, the way we are learning things about each other by just asking questions. It's a great relationship. It works, and I would not change it for anything.
I will say this before we leave. We've been doing this now for 45 minutes, this interview with you. This is the longest Mocha and I have talked together outside of the show in about a decade.
Wow.
So you're welcome. So you're welcome, Broadcast Dialogue.
Thank you. The History of Roz and Mocha hits the Roz and Mocha podcast feed starting April 17th, wherever you get your podcasts, with new episodes dropping every Wednesday at midnight. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us, guys.
Oh, thank you. It was wonderful. You're great.
Thanks for listening to Broadcast Dialogue. For more information about the podcast or to receive exclusive access to our weekly briefing about the Canadian media industry, visit us at broadcastdialogue.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, connect with us on LinkedIn, and follow us on Twitter and SoundCloud.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.